Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
I had three vaccines yesterday, all at once, and all three of them are kicking my ass.
Damn.
Yeah, it was flu and COVID and hepatitis all at the same time, and now I feel like I have the flu, and I've been run over by a bus, and I'm a little delirious, and dizzy, and forgetful, and this is gonna be fun.
Yeah. You're delulu. It's great.
I'm surprised when I got my triple shot, it did not affect me that much.
Yeah, my arms are like red.
I got pneumonia is my third.
Yeah. They were supposed to give me tetanus too. And they were like, yeah, we're going to wait on that. And I'm like, you should have just done it and gotten it all done at once. What the hell? Because I don't want to go through this again. Yay.
I'm going to be getting stabbed a bunch in April.
Fun.
Getting that patch testing to find out what I'm allergic to.
Oh yeah, that's a good thing.
Yay.
Yeah, I had one of those tests for inhalants allergies, and because I guess there's also one for like ingested allergies, which is different, or something, or topical allergies. But yeah, and they were like, oh, well, nothing's coming up. And she's like, I don't know if we need to go to the third sheet. And I was like, you see that one where it says cockroach? I guarantee you I'm going to be allergic to that. Do the third sheet. And sure enough, she found like cockroach and like two other things that I was allergic to.
Oh,
that was fun.
I think everyone's allergic to cockroaches. I don't want those anywhere near me.
Specifically, I've been bitten by cockroaches before and like broke out into like horrible
cockroaches
hives.
Bite?
Didn't know that was a thing.
Yep.
Well, I'm definitely fucking allergic to that then. I think everyone's allergic.
Never attacked. I kept mine under control.
Yeah.
If you were a careless cockroach owner, maybe yours got angry and bit the owner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
was worried we had bed bugs. It was terrifying because they bit me in my sleep.
Ugh.
Yeah, even creepier.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, we had let someone keep their stuff in the upstairs of the house, and it was like an over 100-year-old house with like no insulation. And so we put all of his stuff in the second floor that we didn't use, and so we just didn't even notice that there was an outbreak of cockroaches until it was like a huge infestation downstairs. Yeah.
That's not
good. Yeah. That's what I get for being nice to people. Wee.
Why do you think I'm not nice to anyone?
Yeah.
Including you're Joe. A bad person.
Well, there's that too. But also because helping people fucking sucks.
What's up, Tim? How you doing?
Yeah, helping people sucks.
Fuck See, he people. Gets it.
I had my share of dealing with cockroaches when I worked at Rentway, and I've got to say, like, our house might smell catty, it might smell weedy, we might not always be the cleanest, but we ain't got bugs, and I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
And we are getting raided.
Oh, sweet.
Not have bugs or weed or cats either. As Matt PA screams in the distance at our raid sound, welcome in, Javors and Raiders. We are just pre-show banter right now. We didn't get started yet. We are waiting on Mr. Sperry to join us. I'm going to poke him in a moment, see what's up. Our giveaway tonight, different than usual. We're giving away a Switch game. Bree reviewed Fighting Fantasy Classics for the Switch.
Yeah.
And the publisher was so happy he sent us two giveaway copies.
That is freaking awesome. That is a great game, and I'm really looking forward to more.
He's counting on you for the rest of them.
I bet. I'm good for it. That was good stuff. I saw what they had on the Switch version, and I really want the rest of that to come. I want it to do good so that they make the rest of them. I like the game preservation aspect for sure.
Oh, that reminds me of something interesting that I learned today.
You learned something?
Yes. A manga and anime and movie series, show as well, is coming out on Steam. They're bringing back one of the really old fucking games. I think it is Tomorrow City Hunter.
Jacob's excited about that one. I haven't seen much about it.
Yeah, I just got information in my email today about it. It's coming out tomorrow. And that's just cool because I really like that stuff, but those old style games kick my ass.
Steam demos.
Yeah.
More Steam demos. Hey guys, did you know it's Steam Neck Fest?
Because I'm browsing it right now. You want to check out my trad wife as a femboy?
It has been a lot of emails even for me, and I don't get near the emails that you get, Joe.
When it comes to demos, I have a tendency to ignore them because there's just too many, and even trying to reply to half of those people takes fucking hours and hours and hours that I could be spending working on a review game.
I don't reply to demo emails. If you send me a generic demo email, it's like, hey, click on this link and you could apply for a code for our demo. Right. I'm like, delete. If it's an individualized, hey, Joe, it's me from blah, blah, blah. I know you enjoyed this when we covered this. Would you want to take a look at this demo? Them I'll talk to.
Dims to breaks,
Joe. If you're specifically thinking of us, that's one thing. If we just get a generic, hey, look at our demo, I probably won't.
No one thinks of me, and I'm perfectly fine with this.
We talking demos in here?
We are talking
demos. I've downloaded a few. We demoed?
Did you know it was Steam Next Fest?
Did I know that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude.
Did you know?
I'm like, I feel like I knew. I'm like a little upset. I just got back last night, and I was like, oh man, I feel like I always miss Next Fest, like stream it, but I'll definitely pop in and like play a bunch of games and stuff.
Because I get like 50 emails about demos every fucking day now. I don't even remember who I sent the picture to. I just searched the word demo and went to my trash box, and it was like an entire page of nothing but today.
Jesus.
I get a bunch of those too, which I think is really funny, and it's like leading up to it, and then like people that like I like games I've never heard of before, like yeah, I just looked demo up in my email too, and it's just piles of emails.
So many.
This one's out, and this one's out. Your wish list is this. Like, okay.
But every now and then, we get some good games peeking through, and that's what our show is here for, right?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah.
Good show of unity there. Aki's here, Bree's here, Andy's here, Tim's here. How's everyone doing?
Fantastic. Great.
Good.
I'll find an edit in there somewhere and make it start. It'll work.
Great.
Talking about demos
and shit.
Demos and shit. That's the episode title.
I hope that's the name
demos
of the episode.
In shit.
Demos
right
in
after
shit.
The incredibly religious Maze Dude episode.
Hey, shit isn't unreligious, you know.
I know, but it's...
Oh, man. I love Maze Dude, but I cannot... he will not find my footsteps beside him on this particular journey.
I love them, but it's not for me. I did enjoy some of the music. Some of the music is really enjoyable because it's Maze Dude.
Maze Dude, yeah.
I mean, if you're a fan of Maze Dude, you know what weirdness you're in store for. But the message, it doesn't connect with me because the subject doesn't connect with me. But still love him as a friend, and he still really wants to come down and do another Flag Fest party.
Fuck is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, with party for Flag Day.
Friends in gaming.
No, Flag Day.
Flag Fest. Flag Day. Flag Fest, gotcha.
We had to change it.
Yeah. I saw him at Retro Game Retro? Con. I think I mentioned that. Maybe I mentioned that. I don't remember. I can't remember the cadence of when me and Demage were on here talking about things last fall. I think it was, we were both on about a month after Retro Game Con. And yeah, I saw him because Maze Dude lives in the Syracuse area. So I saw him there and he played Name That Tune.
How do you do?
And fucking lost.
Name That Tune. That's so hard.
What's that?
I feel like Name That Tune is like really tough. Like when you're on the spot too, it's like,
it is. Hey. Yeah. Believe me.
Yeah. You know this song, but like, what is it called? It's I don't know.
Man, what game is it from? Yeah. Good luck. Yeah. So I got some there.
Ooh, didn't Mustin forget his own song?
No, that was Dale North.
Oh, that was Dale. Oh my God. That
was Dale. Mustin was the one who infamously named everything but the, it was like somebody's OC remix, and he was naming like the track, like just rambling off things until, and then it was finally like, we want the game, Mustin. And he was like, oh, right. Final Fantasy VII.
Oh my God.
Dang.
What did Dale get wrong? Which song of his?
I don't remember.
Was it like something obscure that
it was everyone would have forgotten? It was a very early MAGFest because obviously Dale hasn't been to any in like the last decade. But
no,
yeah, I don't even remember him.
Legend of K
playing. I mean, so it would have been. I think it was a Dale remix was in there, and he didn't recognize it. It wasn't like a song that he had wrote because he hadn't completely switched over to composing.
He was still destructive
game journalist. Yep. Yeah.
He has had such an insane career, man.
Man, and he's not even, I mean, I don't know anything about what he's working on, but I just know that he had like the
whatever it is it's going to be insane because
the biggest stuff because he hasn't really had much come out. So I think the projects he has been working on are, I mean, I don't, you know, I still think that the biggest splash from Dale North is yet to come. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, it's like every time I see him post on Facebook, he's like, oh, hey, I just signed a contract with Disney.
Yeah, he does.
Like, casually excited about that. Like if that were me, I would lose my mind. He's just, yep.
Happened. Well, I think that's his next paying the Marvel bills contract. Or with Disney. Yeah. Doing music for like Marvel videos and like Disney Cruise stuff, like interstitial stuff. Like, yeah, he does great work for Disney. And I'm sure that keeps the lights on while he makes video game music.
And that must be he nice. Does.
Yeah.
Andy, what really have you been up to?
I don't know. No, hey, if you were about to say something, go for it, dude. I'll
no, I was what have you been up to? To say, in terms of, I don't want to tell you that.
Well, fine.
No, I was just going to say, I saw that Mina the Hollower has like 4 hours and 100 songs of new Jake Kaufman music, which is incredibly exciting in terms of people we know guy. From... Yeah. I just like always seeing a sign of life from him because he's a phantom otherwise.
Yeah, he kind of turned into a hermit. I don't know many people who are even able to get in touch with him anymore. Yeah. I think George gets in touch with him here and there, but.
Yes, because we had the whole Shovel Knight conversation, that insane Shovel Knight conversation that happened.
Yeah, that was
back in November.
God, what are the odds?
That's right, Shovel Knight. Is there supposed to be a new Shovel Knight coming out? They just came out with another game.
Mina the Hollower is the one coming.
Yeah, that's the new game from there. I thought there was like a like Super Nintendo looking Shovel Knight that was being worked on, but
Shovel Knight Junior,
something Super Shovel Knight. Maybe I'm just making things up.
I mean, they had like, I don't know, they had Shovel Knight Dig that came out, and I like really jumped on that one because I thought that was really cool. I liked the like aesthetic and like the graphics and like the music for that one too. But
I feel like I was here for that conversation. There was a Crypt of the Necrodancer Shovel Knight DLC.
Yep.
We had that conversation, I think.
God, the amount of friends we have in Crypt of the Necrodancer. Jesus.
I was trying to play
like an entire Family Jewel soundtrack. Danny B, A Rival, Vert. They have their own full soundtracks in the game, modeled after Danny B's soundtrack.
That's so cool.
Can't believe the audio work they did for Crypt of the NecroDancer and how above and beyond they went with that game.
Yeah, that's such a wild game too. I need to go back to that one. I was gonna play Cadence of Hyrule this weekend. I really wanted to jump back into that one too, because it's been quite a few years since that one came out, and that one's just like such a good game. And then the whole soundtrack in that is like phenomenal. Like, I'll just listen to that on Spotify sometimes. But
oh man, why do I have such talented friends and I'm so untalented?
Don't say that. You're great.
Well, at least one person believes in me.
No. Everybody, don't jump in at the same time to support Joe.
Oh, I spaced out. Fuck him.
Well, last time this came up, I referred him as the peasant from Fire Emblem Awakening. So,
oh shit! Sorry, Joe.
No, it's accurate. It's accurate.
I care about you, dude.
I'll just be here talking on a podcast for 15 more years.
Yeah. We have a bunch of wildly talented friends.
One can hope.
It's
so.
Just a fact.
This show is basically built around my wildly talented friends all being really bored and deciding to do things for me.
Like I said, awesome. You're good at bringing people together.
I am.
You're the guy that plans the party, dude, and we all show up.
I really wanted to have a wrestling party in March. In March 15th, there is a wrestling pay-per-view for AEW. Like, 2 years ago, our friend Adam, good old Big Adam, who does a lot of racing games here, he had a gathering at his house, Dan, down near York, Hanover, PA, something like that, whatever.
Yep.
They make chips there.
Land of the pretzels. Yeah.
Land of the pretzels. Had a party gathering at his place, and it was around his birthday, and I figured this year there's a party and it's around my birthday, and Ashley's like, the house is a fucking mess. No. So I'm like, I'm not having a party, guys.
Okay.
You can go to a bar.
Yeah, we'll watch it on Discord like we do everything else.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. That works too.
Hopefully it won't get blacked out on Discord.
Oh, God. Could you imagine if they start doing that on Discord?
There's already, you know, they're already means of that video websites try to block you from sharing things over Discord.
Yeah, getting black screens.
That's just like a general thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's like a new thing with Discord too, right? They suddenly want like a picture of you or
more. Yeah,
like
some of that stuff might. I don't know. Yeah, some kind of age verification thing that is allegedly, you know, to protect children, but is more that they, you know, I don't know. This is also months after Discord had like a data breach, and they're like, oh yeah, we want to verify your identity and take your
and we'll never keep any of your scans
ID, and it's just like, hey,
all the
scans. All of them. Yep.
Yeah. So that's a.
No, not only are they not going to keep it, they're also not going to share it with any of their people, except for they get their information by one of their people.
I think the other big thing is they were linked to that company that works with ICE, and people were
Palantir
putting 1+1 together.
Yeah, they have backed away from that, so there's that.
Which is good.
And they're pushing the update to everyone needing to give their private information to later on this year. We'll see how that goes for them then. I don't think it'll go any better than what it did just now, but, you know.
Meh. Hey, speaking of bad news, I mean, like, man, how about that stuff from Xbox on Friday with Phil Spencer retiring and Therabond, like, exiting the place and them putting an AI executive in charge of the company?
Something so crazy, I go from mid-editing the episode to, hey, we got to record something.
Yeah.
Oh, you did record something on
Bree,
the spot.
Bree ended her stream an hour early because we had we had to record some reviews with Jacob, but it's like, no, all hands on deck. We got to talk about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you two think about the Xbox situation?
I am worried about the future of Xbox. That's what I would say.
A common sentiment.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Seamus Blackley was kind of quoted as saying that he thought that this was their efforts to sunset Xbox at this point.
Yep. That's just his read. That's a take. But yeah, I mean, yeah,
that's a take.
It's a pretty believable take when
it's a hot take.
Yeah.
The guy in charge of everything, all he cares about is AI. So, I mean, anything that isn't giving AI all of the money, he is barely even tertiary to him, sadly. Which is why he's lost the company so much money.
Wait, are you guys not into AI? Is that what I'm hearing?
No. Nah, dog.
Nah, dude, that ain't
that's
me.
A no from me.
I know, I'm just fucking with you.
AI is the best thing since the Black Plague.
It's pretty good. Thin the herd a little bit. I'm into that. Are we allowed to say that on the show?
As far as I'm concerned, I think we should be doing that with all the AI bros too. But you know, no one ever goes with my ideas.
Well, that's because you canonically have bad ideas.
It's true.
I think my ideas are great. They're just highly illegal. That's all. There's a difference. They're great ideas.
Debatable. Illegal.
So says you.
Agreed. Good.
Yeah.
Debatable.
Always. No, they're always good.
Debatable.
Just they also just happen to always be illegal. That's all.
Do you think the next Xbox console is still going to happen, or is it going to get scrapped?
I didn't know that it was going to happen before last Friday, to tell you the truth, and now I'm less confident in that.
Yeah. What's the next console?
No, just, you know, an Xbox Series Y. I don't know.
They just confirmed that they were working on more hardware for the future.
But now at the same time last week, they're talking about, you know, because of the shortage of like memory, that consoles are probably going to be getting pushed back, which they shouldn't have been coming out next year anyways.
No.
But like, who knows when that landscape and what it's going to look like to have a quote unquote affordable console, you know, in 2028. Is that just gonna be $1,000 box? And what's that going to be? It's just going to, who knows? I mean, it looks dicey for whatever PlayStation is going to do with the PlayStation 6 as well. At this point, it's just like, it's rough. It looks rough.
Well, I think it's wild too, like competing, like you guys saw the Steam console that they talked about as well, right? And that's I feel like that's a huge hitter to like that, especially having games from these other companies too, like already on Steam as a service too. It's like, well, how do you, at a certain point, like how do you compete? It's PC or a Steam box, because nobody's running for Nintendo anymore, let's be real.
I think a lot of people are running for Nintendo still.
No, Nintendo's dead.
No, yeah, you're right. They're going third party any second.
No one plays the Switch.
No one's been on a Switch 2 in months.
Yeah.
What have you guys been playing on your Switch 2?
Most recently, I've been playing Final Fantasy Tactics, which rules, by the way. It's like one of the best games ever. I know you can get that on anything, but that's what I've been playing on it. I mean, I played Metroid Prime 4. I didn't like
that
much. No, I did not. I played Bonanza. And
what didn't you like about it? Let's give me a quick hot take.
So it's very dull in my opinion. Like it plays very well. Like it plays like the Metroid Prime that you remember, and that action of jumping and shooting things and fighting enemies is very good. But the kind of the environmental design is very dull. And that's in like you have the desert, which is like King dull. But then like all the little areas that spoke off of it, some of it is very visually interesting, but more or less all of the rooms you go into have two doors, which is the room the door you came in and then the door you have to go out. And it's just kind of a very simple linear structure to the areas that is not very Metroid-y and doesn't encourage that kind of like exploration that you usually, you know, expect from a Metroid game. And Metroid, you know, they can be different things. And like I said, it still plays well, but more often than not, I was just kind of like, this is fine. It's just, It's unfortunate. It's I thought it was all right, but
where do you think the problems come from?
Well, I think the problem came from them wanting to turn it into a like Breath of the Wild slash Mario. I remember they announced this game 8 years ago or
yeah.
9 years yeah. ago is when yeah. they announced it. And it probably, I'm sure it went through a lot. And that they had ideas for having like a big open world that you'd ride your bike around. And they just had to stitch something together. So it's like you have this desert in the middle, and then it's like, oh, here's like the lightning bike factory. And then here's a green grassy jungle area, which is actually like the coolest area in the game. It's the first one. And when I was playing that area, I was like, oh fuck, this game feels pretty good. And it's like, here's the fiery volcano area, and here's the ice area, and here's the mine, which is the worst. Cause that's just, it's just going room to room, just shooting and fighting enemies. And there's really very little like puzzle solving or exploration to it. And even like once you finish, like get to the end of it, it just kind of spits you back up at the beginning. Like you, the other levels, at least you had to kind of like work your way back out of them. And that one you didn't. So it was kind of like, well, they finished out the levels that they could and found a way to stitch them together. And then at the very end, you have to ride around on your bike a bunch to collect pieces of a giant mech and a bunch of green crystals, to kind of, I guess, justify having that big space there in the middle.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah. I think it's just a matter of, it's not terrible.
I was like, but shit, why would you play
to that? To the standards of Metroid, it is not there. I mean, Grant really liked it. I think he said it was like a 7 or an 8, like in his opinion. And he is, you know, he cares very much about Metroid and Metroid Prime, yeah, for sure. Specifically. But it definitely, to me, shows how that game was in development for a long time and had a lot of trouble. And they stitched together what they could and shipped it out there. But, you know, if it was an exceptional, tightly designed game, I think we probably would have seen it like 5 years ago.
I'm just waiting for like a bloop. I heard you talking about me, guys. What's going on?
Yeah, at least it came out. But
oof. I mean, I guess, yeah, that's a decent way to look at it. I just hate that they come out with something like as good as like Dread. And then there are all those articles, you know, like, oh, we scrapped it again. Like Metroid Prime 4, we scrapped it. We scrapped it the fourth time, you know. We're going to get into it again. And then it comes out and everybody's just kind of like, yeah, I mean, it's like kind of meh, you know, it's there. So I'm glad it's there, but it's like, come, like we don't need, like with as many indie, like
it's the Metroid's show Chinese democracy,
indie games, you know, like we don't need games that just come out and are meh. We need like, you know, especially from a company, like we need some heavy hitters. Should be a top tier game, you know, but
could be.
Yeah, that's just how I feel about it.
Let's see. And they didn't like immediately have Mercury Steam make another Metroid game.
Yeah,
right. Clearly, that's the death of Nintendo, and they're going third party, just like Xbox.
Yeah.
They made Blades of Fire. Remember that game?
Blades of Fire.
Oh, does it sound generic to you? Blades of Fire?
No, I did not. I think Jacob actually covered that one.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Came out last year, early last year, ish.
It looked interesting, but I never played it.
I didn't play it either. Did you check that one out? You made
weapons and used them until they broke.
Ooh, everyone loves breakable weapons.
That's cool. Yeah. Nice.
There's a reason why I wasn't the one who reviewed it. Because that's just my favorite mechanic.
Not enough nudity in it either, so...
Oh, actually looks like
also a very fair statement.
Oh my gosh, I was on that episode. That's so funny. I was reviewing a Capcom Fighting Collection 2, the one with the SNK games on it. And Shovel Knight Dig was on there.
Oh, nice.
Oh, and Stemmage was on there because Stemmage and I were on every single episode together last year. That is ridiculous. I didn't even realize that it went further back than when we noticed it happening.
Going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Wild, dude.
Yeah.
So, what do you think Xbox could do to get back on track? And is there a back on track for them, or are they done?
I think the problem is that I think they're a long way from being able to get back on track. Because, you know, I mean, games
all it would
have
take
to come
is
out.
A couple people getting fired. So they're just really important people.
Well, but I think, you know, they need, it's not even just people getting fired. It's that they need to have game beyond whatever's going on with the, you know, the corporate side. It's like they need games out. Yeah. I mean, Fable's coming out this year, finally.
Yep.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Supposedly, yep. Allegedly.
Yeah, I don't trust any of it to come out right now.
Yeah, Gears, the new Gears is supposed to come out this year.
E-Day, allegedly.
Yeah. E-Day, allegedly. So they,
Microsoft has promised Halo, Forza, and Gears this year. So
yeah, and Forza seems likely. That's in like a couple months.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely going to happen.
Halo, that's not a new Halo, though. That's like a remaster?
It's Campaign Reloaded.
Oh, Campaign Reloaded. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, that's probably, I don't know. It's just, it's so weird to me. And this is just thinking of the Xbox 360 heyday, which, you know, the 360 just turned 20. And just like, oh, you had, you know, Halo 3, and like the other, like ODST and Reach on there, and you had the three Gears of War games, and just like all the two Fable games, and so much stuff was coming out at that time. And then it kind of slowed down a little with the Xbox One, because, you know, things take longer to develop, and that just felt like it hit a wall. Like, it's just wild that, like, there hasn't been a Gears 6, or there hasn't been a new Gears in like since 5. Like, that's crazy. Gears was so popular, and then like Halo Infinite kind of not even kind of, but fell flat, it feels like. And just say Fable has been in limbo for a long, long time, and we've just been like waiting for like these franchises to hit. And like, yeah, the stuff that they own, because, you know, they bought Double Fine and Obsidian, like that stuff has come out and certainly been good, but it feels like they've been missing like kind of the big signature games that they had years and years ago.
I think the biggest problem that Xbox has is that they gave up too quick on their exclusives. You could say that they waited 25 years too long, but they finally had a slate of games coming out that people looked at and were like, okay, that might be worth getting an Xbox for. Indiana Jones, I might get an Xbox for that. Fable, I might get an Xbox for that. Forza Horizon 6, I might get an Xbox for that. New Halo game, I might get an Xbox for that. Oh, they're all going to be day one on PlayStation? I don't need an Xbox for that.
Yeah.
That's true. They no longer have a reason to sell their system, and they need to find a way to do it. Does that mean putting the exclusives back in the box? No, because that'll never happen now. They went third party. There's never going to be okay, we're closing up shop to everyone else. It's just us again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of the thing, is that they're a third party that happens to have a console at this point, is more what it feels like. Cause they put things, they have the Xbox console, they have Game Pass, and those are their things, but, you know, they're putting out the games everywhere. So it's like, yeah, how much are they going to still need that piece of hardware? Or is the next Xbox just going to be like, oh, it's a cloud game streaming box? Or is it just, you know, you just play it on PC or whatever? Like, how much does an Xbox console install base matter in 3-4 years?
Yeah.
I don't really plan on getting another Xbox anytime soon, even if it was coming out next year.
I'm up in the air. So much of my library is on Xbox that I kind of feel like I'm locked into sticking with it if another one comes out.
Yeah. I just think, I mean, I feel the same way about like the PlayStation right now. I just feel like I can ride what I currently have for a very long time.
Yeah.
Before there's a point where it's like, oh, the games that are coming out aren't running on the old generation. No, not at all. I feel like these consoles haven't even been used to their greatest potential yet.
Oh, nowhere near it.
No.
Look at something like Demon's Souls that was a launch title for PS5, and nothing has looked that good.
And it's not going to, because they shut down the studio.
Oh, God. That's... What the fuck, Sony?
It's a really crazy week last week.
It was. And then the Pokemon
Nintendo games charging $20 for 20-year-old Game Boy Advance games.
And they immediately went to number one on the sales charts.
Absolutely. My kid pre-ordered it immediately with his eShop money. I was like, dude, it's just a Game Boy Advance game. Like if there's nothing different about it, like I could get you these. Like, I don't care. I'm like, okay. Well, yep. Nintendo knows their audience.
Yeah, they do. And $20 isn't a horrible price. People have been saying, I'll pay $100. That's what I paid for my Sapphire blue cart.
I mean, the Fire Red Leaf Green cartridges are like $100-$150. Like not an expensive game or not a cheap game if you want to own it legitimately.
So anyway, what I think Xbox can do to try straightening things out is first they got to work on their exclusivity message. And by that, I think live service games should be everywhere. Something like Fable. Give that a 6-month head start on Xbox. That doesn't need to be day one on PlayStation. Give your Xbox owners a reason to have it. Like Avowed. I don't give a fuck that's on PlayStation. But it's nice we had it a year earlier to feel like, hey, we had a game. Mm-hmm. You know, the same thing. Starfield is getting a PlayStation version. Everyone knows that's happening. Mm-hmm. I think another thing they need to do is go back into hardware, and they need to do something to force the industry into either going with Hall Effect joysticks or something better to eliminate stick drift. And if they're the first company to really jump into it and they force the hand of everyone else, they could be seen as a leader in that. And a lot of people will be much happier that their controllers last longer than a year. And I think they should restart the backward compatibility program. I think they gave up on it because it didn't make them enough money, and they gave out the bullshit excuse that they hit the limitations of what they could do. Bitch, Halo 1 isn't playable. You didn't hit your limits.
I wonder if AI could figure it out.
Maybe. Oh, that'd be great.
No, it really, really could not.
Go back to that, too.
I put in a disc for like a Japanese Xbox One game, and it's fully translated to English. And then you start playing and your character floats off screen and it warps inverted and it turns into a black hole and everyone dies because of AI. Thank you, AI.
Oh, that'd be so sick, dude. Let's do it.
Dude, what an effect, right?
Fund it.
But yeah, I think those three things could definitely help kind of get Xbox on the right path and give them a feeling and an identity again of, hey, remember when we talked about preservation? We're not just bullshitting about it anymore. Like, we're going to reinvest in preservation and using your old games. You know, this huge stack of Activision Blizzard games we didn't do anything about with for the backward compatibility program. Okay, we'll look at them. Shit like that. I don't expect them to get every version of Madden playing. But they could add titles. They could definitely add more titles.
Yeah.
Like Madden.
Yeah. All the Maddens. I want them all.
Oh.
I won't rest until every Madden is playable between original Xbox, Xbox 360. I want
too many Maddens.
The collector's edition of 25, or no, of 20 that had the big black John Madden book with like the fold out and the extra discs. I want that remastered. Steelbook, baby.
I feel like that's how some of these other games are going. Like I was talking about that the other day too. I was like, Call of Duty is just like, feels like Madden now. They're just making one every year and it's the same thing. Yeah. It's just another sports game.
Annual games need to stop.
Just another sports game. Oh, well.
Oh, anyway, we got games to talk about. Should we dive into our reviews for the week?
Sounds good.
Let's do games.
All right. First game to talk about tonight, Neo 3, developed and published by Koei Tecmo Games, provided to us by Koei Tecmo Games. Thank you, Koei Tecmo. Andy, say thank you.
Thank you, Joey. Thank you.
Thank you, Joey Tecmo.
Joey Tecmo. Release February 6th on PS5 and Steam for $69.99. Neo 3 is the eagerly anticipated continuation of the Dark Samurai action RPG series Neo. deadly struggle unfolds amidst the devastation of an alternate warring states period where bandits run rampant and yokai skulk about. Andy, what is going on in the newest iteration in the Neo series?
Let me just preface this too by saying, like, this game is so huge that there's a lot to cover. I'm trying to do like an overview of everything too. There's so much. It's wild. I have played the other ones too. Like, I really like Neo. So, I'm maybe a little biased to it, but. As far as my opinion goes, if you're not familiar with Neo series, like, as a whole, then, like, I would say definitely look into it a little bit, try it out. It is more on the, like, action, like, Souls, like, you know, genre. But as Elden Ring, I would say, is to, like, the original Dark Souls series, Neo 3 definitely takes inspiration and elements that create a much more, like, balanced and inclusive environment from the previous games. So with that, the series has evolved from a grueling and punishing Souls-like, not to say it's not still that, but to more of a, like, open world experience. So instead of a linear pathway, you know, it really, like, brings everything open and offers room for players to learn and grow alongside the game. And that still offers, you know, the brutal hardcore combat experience that, like, returning fans have come to appreciate. So as a fan of both Neo 1 and 2 myself, it's nice to experience an addition to the series that feels both familiar and brand new at the same time. Something that I feel like is really hard to create, you know, and emulate, you know, especially in like a genre as combat heavy as this. So in Neo 3, you play as, I'm going to butcher every single name, definitely on purpose.
Welcome to my life, man.
Perfect Japanese. You play as Takachiyo, the grandson of Ieyasu Tokugawa. Dude, Aki, help me out here. An heir to the seat of Shogun, who must travel back in time to obtain a means of defeating an ancient evil that has corrupted the present day. That evil force is led by Takachiyo's younger brother, Tokugawa Kunimatsu. I feel like I'm doing good.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, you're doing good so far.
You guys are awesome, man. Thank you. I appreciate you guys. he is consumed
thank
by
you,
hatred.
Joey Tecmo.
Joey Tecmo, dude. For the and Neem Tinja. He is consumed by hatred toward his brother's succession. You're just gonna scrap this whole thing, dude. Empowered by his ancient evil force.
Canceled right now.
I mean, we'll get through it eventually too. anyway, Tokugawa leads an army of yokai against the land, and the era of peace suddenly turns to hell. Takachiyo will have his own magical support along with his guardian spirit, Kusanagi, to help defeat the evil forces. Okay, I'm like tripping over like all these crazy words. I feel like the story as a whole, like, kind of like sets it up, obviously, you know, and there's like really cool cutscenes and animations and characters and like voice acting, like, to everything too. I guess maybe just me in general, like, I don't pay super hardcore attention to like what's going on in the story, you know, so it's nice to kind of get like an overview of everything too and be like, oh, there's evil and you have to defeat the evil too, you know. But either way, you know, like, the story is somewhat important, so just know, like, you're going through and you're fighting bad guys. But I would say one of the things that really sets Neo series apart is like the combat system, you know, especially from other Souls like, you know, brutal heavy combat games. It's a very like overwhelming experience, like, at first glance. You have alternate stances, you have different weapon and armor builds, you have level systems, you have weight systems, you have skill trees, not to mention like the spirit gardens, guardians, and there's like a new combat, like the new ninja combat style that they introduced to this one. In the game, it's nice because all these elements are introduced slowly. They've made a lot of quality of life improvements from the previous games. I would say respecking levels, because there is levels you get, obviously, and then skill trees, and like levels are based on weapons you use, and there's so many different weapons you can kind of explore. But respecking and like skill trees could have been a little bit better. You pretty much have to like start back from the beginning and figure out where you're going with your build. You know, if you're, I guess if you're looking for an alternate gameplay style, you know, you can experiment a little bit here and there. And that's, I guess, part of the experience as well, too. Because there's so much loot like in this game, and just bonuses and little trinkets and things that you gain along the way as well, too. So let me start with the basics. You'll use ki or stamina to perform all your attacks, as well as parry and dodge. You can recover ki by waiting patiently or by performing a ki blast, which not only kind of does a quick charge for your ki meter, but also destroys enemy yokai zones. These zones speed up the yokai's like own recovery speed and keep them attacking and like drain yours as well too. So it's important to kind of pay attention to that. And it's interesting in a game like this where you have to keep track of like so many things, as well as like making sure your stamina like bumps back up again. If you don't, and you don't keep an eye on this stamina gauge, once your ki is exhausted, it leaves you open for some pretty heavy attacks. Like you're pretty much immobilized, you know. So you're just taking damage, and that happened to me so many times where I accidentally, you know, used it all up, and then I just stood there and got the shit beat out of me. So but the same thing in turn too, like bringing your opponents down to zero will like stagger them, opening them up for like high damage grapple attack moves and things like that, which is really nice trade-off. Switching between stances and combat styles is another element to the battle system. This is a very battle heavy game. So in the samurai style, so there's a samurai and the ninja. Samurai style, you have to dip between high, medium, and low stance in order to either block or penetrate an enemy's defenses. And then switching between samurai and the newly introduced ninja combat style not only will parry an enemy's what's called a burst break attack, which is usually signified by like a red cloud around them. It's generally an unblockable attack, so you have to time it out and essentially parry using this like shift at the right time. The other combat style introduces like a much more faster and agile attack overall. And in the ninja, you'll actually like trade speed for power. So it's kind of up to you which one you want to play as. You know, the other Neo games 1 and 2, they had only the samurai style and the three stances. So this one introduces the new one, and there's not any enemy that's really like, you know, partial to one or the other. Like you could play the whole game as one or the other two, which I think is really nice, especially compared to some games where it's like this style is only specific for these enemies, or this style is only specific for those enemies. Also, as in previous Neo games, you'll gain Guardian Spirits. These play a slightly more important role in this title. Guardian Spirits are obtained as you progress through the story. They lend you their strength in combat and also during exploration, too, because there's a very heavy exploration element to this game being open world. There's a wide variety of Guardian Spirits as well that can be obtained, and then these spirits can also be upgraded to help you find more things or deal more damage or add to your Amrita gauge, which actually sends you into almost like an ultimate attack mode, you know. So you'll be attacking enemies, and then you'll go into this and none of the attacks against you like alter your health or anything like that, which is really nice. So that will build slowly over time too. I would say one of the best non-combat additions to Neo 3 is the auto-equip feature, which, as I mentioned earlier, the insane amount of loot that is obtained in this game can be also very overwhelming. Cycling through, equipping different armor sets, because there's tiered armor, and then there's tiered weapons, and then there's different armor sets that combine with different pieces, you know, in a set. And it just gets wild and insane. But so you can actually set it to where if you want, you know, a certain weight, you know, because there's also the weight distribution as well. So if you want to move a little bit faster, you'll obviously wear lighter armor sets. And if you don't mind, you know, slowly sidestepping instead of a full on dodge roll, you know, you'll go for a heavier armor set and take more damage. I felt like this was huge because a lot of times in the previous ones, you will go through, and since it's level based, you'll kind of pick up everything throughout the level, and then towards the end of the level, you'll always cycle through and be like, "All right, well, this one's a little bit better than that one, and this one's a little bit better than that one," you know. And so you'll it's like chores every time. And so this was just a, I want to play the game, I want to stay in the action, you know, and I want the best shit to be equipped to me, you know, based on my like loadout kind of thing. As I mentioned earlier too, there's like so much to this game, like I could go into as well too.
Sounds like a BD one.
Honestly, like, yeah, I could do a whole, like I could do a part two next week too, and talk about things that I haven't even covered in this one too. I would say, just to kind of like recap a little bit too, Neo 3 is, it's definitely taking more of an open world concept, which some people are a little on the fence of. I really liked it. It still holds true to the main style of gameplay. There's still little missions you have to go do and explore areas, you know, and clear certain areas of the landscape. And since it's not level based, you know, it opens it up. So if this area is too hard, you know, maybe you go fight these guys over here instead, you know. It's got an extensive map system. Like, the map is huge. You know, you're not only exploring the map, but you're also traveling through time and then exploring new maps too, based on the time period and the history in Japan. So, you will actually get bonuses depending on how well you've explored an area. Those bonuses will also increase your base stats. Mm-hmm. Every time you complete a side quest or clear out enemy forces, capturing enemy bases, anytime you interact with certain NPCs, or you'll duel against master, kind of like boss enemy, you know, like guys. Also, those things will uncover new areas of the map, you know, pinpoint areas of interest. All these things, just, I'm telling you, because they increase your base stats. So going around and exploring is a huge part of this game as well too, and they've really capitalized on like getting you out and about and like exploring and finding new things, interacting with friendly yokai such as like the Kodama or the Scampus or Chijiko, you know. These all just kind of like add overall to the gameplay too, which is nice. So, but yeah, there's so much more I could cover, like 12 pages long, but, overall I think the game, is really good. This kind of gives you like a good idea of Neo. It is very Souls-like. It is very, hack and slash, like battle heavy, and also, like skill-based, you know, paying attention to certain moves and your key counter and enemy moves and all that stuff as well too. There's powerful beings. There's like a vast full history, and they kind of tie like these magical elements into the history of Japan and like the story elements to it as well. Magic, brutal enemy combat, you know. It carries the tradition of the original games, you know, and it does seem a little daunting at first, but I would say if you're interested in the Neo series in general, this, as I mentioned before, is kind of the Elden Ring of the Dark Souls. It's a little more easy to get into. Like I mentioned before, the quality of life updates are amazing. It is a really good addition to the Souls-like genre while also being its very own thing. So in my mind, I recommend it. I think it's good.
Very good.
I like it not being level based. That interests me.
What interests you about not level based over level based?
I didn't care for the, like, I, when I played Neo 1, I didn't like, you know, as someone who enjoys the Souls games, I also enjoy very much the exploration aspect of it. And like having the world to explore, but also being able to kind of like find your own friction. Like, as you said, like if you go into an area that's too tough, it's like, oh, I can go explore somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I like that rather than like, okay, here's your level. And those levels were pretty, you know, tight. I mean, they had, you know, some branching paths, but it's like, you know, the level's the level. It's only so big. So I like the idea of having more space to explore and move around and kind of find your own way through the game.
Yeah, I played Neo 1 and I played Neo 2, and I remember playing Neo 2 with a buddy of mine, and he told me that he would only play, like, we played the whole thing together in the DLC, and he told me he would only play it with me if I beat the first level by myself. And I started on Neo 2, so Neo 1 I had to go back to, actually. But Neo 2, jumping into that and playing that first level by myself was so difficult, and the linear pathway, like you said too, there's obviously like little branching pathways too, you know, but it's all mm-hmm. one level, and so you're going to interact with certain enemies or certain situations whether you like it or not, was so difficult for me at the time. and just fighting the same guy over and over again and just hating the game, you know, like I feel like, and everybody that I feels like goes into Souls like games, like, knows that feeling of like, I have to go down these steps. I have to fight this guy. If I'm not good, then I'm going to start over and I'm going to have to fight every single guy up until I get to that point again. And that sucks, dude. Absolutely blows. So I thought it was really cool that, you know, especially for somebody like you or me, you know, or anybody that's like interested in it, you know, it's a little bit easier to kind of like bounce around and be like, all right, well, I'll fight this guy and maybe I'll gain some experience and like, you know, get a little better or understand, like, especially with how much there is for stances and the friendly yokai, you know, and the guardian spirits and the you know, just everything. There's different weapons too, like. There's like 12 different weapons you can learn how to master, you know. It gets crazy. So I thought they did a really good job with it.
All right. Any other thoughts or questions?
I'm good.
$70. Give me a verdict.
Get it. Get it, dude. It's so good.
Get her done.
Get her done.
Oh, you had to ruin it.
Yep. You're welcome.
Get it undone.
Next up, Rayman 30th Anniversary Edition, provided to us for this coverage by Ubisoft. Thank you, Ubisoft. Tim, say thanks.
Thanks, Ubisoft.
Developed by Digital Eclipse.
But hey, about that Prince of Persia remake, you know.
Different which one? Time. Different time. Different
the, time. The Sands of Time that they canceled like a month ago.
Oh, I'm so sad.
It made me sad. I was really looking forward to it. I was ready to give you money. Right. Anyway, sorry. Time. Thank you for Rayman.
I think everyone was ready to give them money for that one. That is such a shame.
Developed by Digital Eclipse, published by Ubisoft. Released February 13th, Series X and S, Switch, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Perform Rayman's signature punch and helicopter hair glide through colorful worlds from the Dream Forest and its unforgettable mosquito ride to Bandland's musical chaos, rescue the Electoons, and save the world from Mr. Dark in a classic platforming adventure with a unique art style that remains as magical today as it was in the 90s. Tim, tell us about your time with Rayman 30th Anniversary Edition.
It is still pretty magical. I'll say that much. Yeah, so this is a release from Digital Eclipse, who are known for their big game kind of re-releases over the course of the past few years. Some being, you know, kind of bigger, some collections being bigger and getting more attention, both from like just kind of the scope of the games that are included, as well as the documentary materials that are included. So like when I think of bigger ones, I would think of the Atari 50th anniversary, which was huge. The Mortal Kombat collection that came out last year, like the Making of Karateka from a couple years ago, even that one was like a little bit smaller because it was really focused on one game. But this is definitely a smaller one. This is just Rayman 1 specifically. So the games that are included here, if you are interested, it is I just spilled something on me. it's all good. Don't worry. We have Rayman 1 for the PlayStation 1. We have Rayman 1 for MS-DOS. We have Rayman 1 for the Jaguar. We have Rayman for the Game Boy Color and Rayman for the Game Boy Advance. Rayman PS1 Jaguar DOS versions are pretty similar. The PS1 version included here is considered generally to be the more definitive of the three, those three versions that are included, because it has all the animated cutscenes in it. Even though the game was originally developed for Jaguar, the PS1 version ended up being having more stuff in it. And then the Game Boy versions are, you know, they're scaled down, either scaled down or I think the Game Boy Advance one is a completely different, just totally different adventure. But kind of the main attraction here is it's Rayman 1. So the PlayStation 1 version has like widescreen support. They have toggles, because in the original Rayman, you don't start out being able to punch or glide. You don't start out with his moves. You start out with just, you can just move around and jump. They have it so that you can just toggle on all of his abilities from the start. If you don't want to go through just unlocking them all, they have toggles for, you know, infinite lives and continues. The original Rayman is, I have heard some, I think it is known that game has a little bit of a difficulty issue in its original form, just because you can run out of lives, you can run out of continues, and it can make some parts of the game frustrating. But they just, you know, whatever, here you go, you can get through the game. They can start you off at max health too. Just accessibility things to make the playability of the game a little more manageable, or a lot more manageable, as it were. The DOS version also has those modifiers in it, though the DOS version doesn't have a widescreen mode. The Jaguar version doesn't have any of that stuff in it. But yeah, like I said, the PlayStation version, that's, I think, the one they're really more expecting you to sit down and play. And the other stuff is there if you want to just kind of check out how it looked, or check out what the differences were on those other platforms. It also has a rewind feature. So, you know, if you get hit or knocked off a platform, you can just rewind the game right there and undo your horrible, terrible mistake. And Rayman 1 is still a pretty fun game. Like, and you know, you mentioned the art style, like it still really holds up. Like, it's not as lush or as well animated as a like more modern 2D platformer, of course, but compared to, you know, its contemporaries, like, it looks really good and it still stands out. It's still very colorful and animates nicely, and it's just very pleasant to look at. It's dated, but it doesn't feel like unplayably dated. And it's still fun to play. And if you've played the newer ones, like Rayman Origins, not to be confused with this, which is the origin of Rayman or Rayman Legends, you're still going through levels. You're still trying to collect your lums in every level to explore around, and you need to get all of those. You need to find all of the lums in every level if you want to unlock the last level. So that is a important part of the game. And there's like 20 some levels in the original Rayman that you have to do that. They also added in this collection, there is a bunch of level packs that were added to the DOS version in the late 90s, which comes out to a astonishing 120 additional levels. Quality may vary, but that's all, that stuff is all there. There is a prototype you can play of the game that was originally spec'd for the Super Nintendo. That's kind of a cool thing. And in terms of, you know, kind of historical documentation, it does have like a little timeline you can go through to kind of see the history of the development of the game, which has kind of the signature thing that Digital Eclipse does, where like when you're on a particular panel, you can pop out and like look at a piece of art or just jump right into the game. They have some interviews in there as well. And it's not as extensive as like what was in the Atari or Mortal Kombat collections, but again, this is a $20 release, not a more expensive one. And it's, you know, it's all about one game and kind of the significance of Rayman and what it meant for platformers and Ubisoft in particular, because it is the game that basically put Ubisoft on the map outside of Europe in a more worldwide way. And it's cool. One thing I will say, they this is insane. They don't have the original soundtrack in there.
Wait,
they replaced it. Yeah. So they, and believe it or not, this is a big point of contention with like Rayman fans, is they took out the original soundtrack and they replaced it with a new arranged soundtrack by the guy who did the music for the newer Rayman games. And, I don't know why they wouldn't have both. That seems like, you know, for people that played Rayman at the time, like that's a big piece of like that nostalgic memory that's missing. And you know, supposedly
is it like era appropriate music, or is it like current day orchestral?
It sounds good, but it's, you know, it's not the same thing. Like I wouldn't have even noticed because I didn't play the original Rayman like at the time. Like I don't have a strong connection to that. I didn't really get into Rayman until Origins and Legends. So that didn't strike me until I was like kind of just doing some more research and finding out like, oh crap. Now, supposedly, allegedly, like, Ubisoft is looking into adding the original soundtrack back in. Apparently the same thing took place with the Tomba remasters last year, the year before, and they got the original soundtracks put back into them. But just like a weird choice when you're specifically trying to preserve something and present it as it, you know, you want to present it as it originally existed, and then, you know, you kind of can layer on some new stuff like the modifiers for continues and your abilities and whatnot. But all the original stuff should still be there. And I don't know if maybe there was some kind of weird music licensing thing or what, but it should be there. And I hope it's something that they will look into fixing. But overall, you know, this is a $20 release, and probably, I mean, easily, I think it is the best way to play Rayman that is out there on modern platforms. Cause otherwise you're like looking up the PS1 classics version. There's an old DOS sort of release on GOG, but there really isn't a way to play the first one. And I think it's still like for a $20 platformer, I think that Rayman, the original Rayman is worth that price, on its own, even if it is like a 30-year-old game at this point. Like I think it still plays well enough and like looks good. But you know, they've added some bells and whistles and other stuff in here that I think makes it a fair price and a fair game to pick up if you are looking into checking out the original Rayman.
Very good. Well, it is a $20 package. What do you think of it?
Yeah, no, I think it's solid at that price point. Like if it was more, then I think you'd have to be questioning like, okay, well, why isn't some of this stuff buttoned up, or why isn't there more games? But for $20, when, you know, really the star of the show is having the original PS1 Rayman with some extras, some other stuff to look at, the historical timeline to look over. Hopefully they'll get the soundtrack sorted out. I think that's a good price, for $20.
Very good.
And it's worth a purchase. Yeah.
All right. With that, Tim and Andy, that is it for you two. I want to thank you two for coming on, hanging out with us. I was hoping you two
always would be able to
tag out and tag Purnell in, but he just messaged me that he's just getting out of board game night, and he was like, "Do you want me to hop on now or when I get home?" And I'm like, "When you get home, drive careful." You know, it just snowed. Yeah,
definitely did.
So,
wouldn't be the first time he was on his phone on the road during a podcast. I will never forget that one. The one year where he went to Best Buy to purchase Dragon Quest Builders because he found out it was on sale,
and he did that while we were
during the course of the show.
I wish I could remember so what episode number that was.
It was a Christmas one. So that just narrows it down. And I think it was definitely out. It was when I was on the show more regularly. So sometime between like 2017 or 2016 and 2020 or so.
We'll have to figure it out. But
yeah, it's like 5 episodes to look through.
Do you two have any final words before we let you go?
I don't. I'm very sleepy.
Okay, go nap now.
I want to go to bed.
Well, you go nap now. Neo. That's it. That's all I got.
Take it easy, guys.
Later, dudes.
And with that, welcome in to Accidental Punch and Crew, rating us with a party of 5. Welcome in. I hope everyone is doing well tonight. We are right smack dab in the middle of some reviews. We had something up next, but Pernell ain't here yet, so I'm gonna shuffle. Does that work for you too?
Yeah.
Sure. Hockey. I don't mind.
Every day I'm shuffling.
Every day we shuffle. Next up, Styx, Blades of Greed, developed by Cyanide Studio, published by Nacon, released February 19th, Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $49.99. You play as Styx, a cunning goblin with a caustic sense of humor who has mastered the art of infiltration. Your goal? To get your hands on quartz, the most precious and dangerous resource in a world on the brink of a war between elves, humans, and orcs. Aki. Styx is a long sneaking franchise. Yes. What's going on in this one?
Okay, this one seems to pick up almost immediately after the second game, I believe. I did not play the second game, so I'm not 100% sure. And you're on a ship being chased, and the ships are airships in this, so it's not like on the water. And you have an elf and a human aboard, and y'all kind of sort of do that minor thing called crashing, just a little bit. And you're trying to basically stop the world powers from having this super powerful magical rock, more or less. Instead, US Styx are trying to find it all and absorb it so that it just becomes just a fucking rock, because fuck these guys. Fuck them all in particular. That ends up being kind of your goal, is basically to first find a ship that isn't, you know, destroyed, and then you and your merry band of dipshits go off and start pillaging all of the quartz and stuff from all of the military factions that exist, because fuck it.
Oh, we are getting another raid. Punished Echo coming in here. Group of 6, welcome in, everybody. How is everyone doing tonight? We are in the middle of some reviews. We are talking about Styx, Blades of Greed. Aki, this is... When did this franchise start? Do you remember where Styx started?
No, but I can tell you.
I believe, wasn't Styx first the character in Of Orcs and Men for 360?
Yes. Yeah. Which was back in 2012.
I know something. Look at that. I know shit.
You knew something I didn't know, because I didn't actually know that.
I have that game.
Nice.
European only. Nice. Never released in America. But sounds plays via backer compatibility.
Very nice.
So there you go. If you want to find out Styx's origins, there you be.
Fair.
So anyway, yeah, Styx, Blades of Greed, as you were.
So you're just going around. This Styx is all set up as... as missions, basically, that you do, and you get access to different landmasses. There's 3 of them that I'm aware of, and basically some missions will be in some of these different places. Some of them will be back more or less where the first area where you started, realistically speaking. And you unlock different fast travel points, that are tied to the missions, and from there you can actually go around this area and find more fast travel points. And then after you do the mission, you can go back to these areas anytime, because after that you can find more quartz locations, you can find items that are hidden around that the human wants to steal just because they're like really pricey objects that she wants to take and sell, I guess, and things like that. So you get a ton of side quests, and you get to go right back to the place where you visited, and usually more of the map is unlocked at that point that you get to visit, and enemies are all over the place, even more than what they are for the missions, and there's a lot for the missions. So many enemies. And yeah, the interesting thing about
this
game,
with so many more enemies, does it turn into a more action-focused game at all?
Kind of. In the first Styx game, you were kind of supposed to go through a good chunk of the game just without fighting, period. Because Styx is just a tiny little dude. He's more than happy to jump on your face and stab you like 50 times. But once you got a big long sword that's taller than he is and heavy armor, he's not exactly what I would call particularly useful anymore. So the whole point of the game was stealth kills or just not even interacting with any of the enemies. This game is still very much that. If you are fighting more than one enemy at a time, you're not. You're just going to die. You're restarting is what's happening. And if you're fighting one enemy at a time, you're probably still going to be restarting. Thankfully, this does have a quick save mechanic, which is great, even on Xbox, which is super cool. And it's just pushing in one of the thumbsticks, so that's really nice. And you can do it basically any time that you're not in the middle of a fight or anything. As long as enemies aren't actively looking for you, you can save. Loading that save might cause you some problems, as I have found numerous times, because if you're like hiding behind something, because there's actually a button to like attach yourself to it so you're properly hidden. Yeah, if you load a save where you're hidden like that, you're not hidden like that anymore. And enemies, if they're looking in your general direction, they immediately notice you, which kind of sucks. Big time. How many times that screwed me up because I thought I'd be real smart. And
proud of you.
I haven't learned, so I'm proud really not.
Proud of you.
You're yeah. Still
sucking at games. I'm proud of you.
I know, right? However, this game is a lot more focused on killing enemies than the prior ones. You just still aren't getting like into knife fights with them if you're smart, because you're going to die. Instead, it's
so
more
the
about
big question: Does this game have a pacifist run?
There is no achievement for that. You probably can do it. Most likely can.
I know stealth folks love their pacifist runs.
Yeah, this one's going to be pretty hard to do a pacifist run, just because there's a lot of big areas where there's groups of enemies that are all talking to each other and never shut the fuck up, and therefore they're looking behind the other guys, so there's not really a way to sneak through lots of areas. This one does have a lot more. Huh?
So you just gotta fight?
No, this one's more focused on how do you distract enemies, how can you kill them without fighting, things like that, because there's a lot of verticality in this game. There's always been some verticality to these games, but there's a lot in this one. Like, in the very first level, I had like 4 or 5 floors worth of area to go that I had access to, and in some of these areas, like, chandeliers can be dropped on people and kill a big old group of people all at once. Giant cargo boxes can be dropped on people and kill a whole bunch of them at once. And would you like to guess where a bunch of these dipshits like to stand? There you go.
By the ledge.
Sometimes, actually, and you can push enemies off the ledge, too, which was actually a really fun mechanic. Because instead of just being behind them and clicking the button, which kills them, which is not quiet, by the way, you can just shove them off, and that is quiet for reasons I don't comprehend. But in this game, in order to stealth kill somebody, you actually have to be attached to a piece of cover and be able to assassinate them without running into like a bucket or a chair or something. Because if Sticks hits that, it has physics and it'll bounce around and alert everyone else around. You'll still get the stealth kill, but all the enemies will probably have seen you by the time you finish that at that point.
Nice.
So it is really, it ends up being kind of a puzzle where it's like, okay, how can I kill all these people? They're not moving. That's a problem. There's also mechanics like you can poison food and drink that are along some guards' pathways that they walk. They'll stop and eat or drink something so you can basically vomit into it, and after they eat it, they'll walk around a little bit and then die, which is fun.
I'm pretty sure the assassin just came into your room. I heard the door open. So Sticks is in the room with you now.
Nice. And yeah, you can also turn off lights and stuff, so the area is darker for you, so you can sneak around without being seen as readily, things like that, which is nice. That's not as useful as it was in the prior games, because in the prior games, if you were in the dark, you were in the dark and they weren't seeing shit, and it was nice. In this one, they just see you like a second slower, maybe, so it's not super useful, which is kind of upsetting. And if you do get into like a stand-up fight, you can win. There is a basically a dodge that slows down time, perfect dodge, and then you can whack enemies. But it takes a lot to kill any of them because, again, you have a tiny little knife, and they have, you know, human proportions. So it becomes kind of a problem.
Well, let's talk price on this thing. It is a pricier release from Nacon. This is one of their big tentpole releases. The game is available for $49.99. There is a Quartz Edition available for $59.99. Let's cover these two first. The Quartz Edition is a $10 upgrade that includes a Greedy skin pack and a Legacy skin pack, which, you know, skins, obviously. And then there's a weapon pack, which includes 3 new daggers and 5 taunts, which those sound like they could be handy. There is also a starter pack, which includes 2 bonus level up skill points.
In these games, sometimes in Sticks 2, they had a DLC that had outfits and knife skins. And they actually did change the gameplay a little. I don't know if these do that as well, because they don't outright state that they do. But I would venture a guess that they probably do something. Some of them probably do make the game slightly easier. So it might be worth it if you're not as good at stealth, because I know in Sticks 2, the knife that you could buy... after you killed somebody with an assassination, it dissolved their body immediately, which was something you can't really do.
We'll get there in a second. For Sticks, Blades of Greed, $50, $60 for the collect for the Quartz Edition stuff. What do you think?
I think both of them are worth it. If you're like, I don't really need the skins, then Standard Edition is fine. If you would like them, they do look nice. I'm probably going to eventually buy them because I looked at a bunch of them like, oh, these look really fucking cool. Even if they don't have any use in the game, they're really cool to look at. So I will probably get the DLCs. So if you like the DLCs, definitely get that pack.
Cool. And for people who are new to the franchise, they have the Sticks Master of Stealth Collection, which includes Sticks, Blades of Greed, Sticks, Shards of Darkness, Sticks, Master of Shadows, and all the DLC, including the Acid Knife for the second game. That is $69.99, so an extra $10 from the Quartz Edition to get 2 other games. Thoughts on...
And their DLC.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't much for the first game, so.
Yeah.
But $70 for everything for a newcomer to the franchise. What do you think?
This one becomes a lot more iffy for one very simple reason. I think the games are totally worth it. I think that is a very worthwhile pack. But there's a big caveat to this. Do you care about achievements? If you do, the first two games have broken-ass achievements that they knew about and didn't care to fix, which is why I haven't played two. So if you don't care about that and you're just like, I just want the story, totally worth it because they're good games, very good games. And getting both of them and the DLC for the second game, because the first game I don't think has any, totally easily worth $10, 100%. So as if you just want the story and you don't care about achievements, definitely get that edition. It's going to be the best one. It's totally worth the money. If you do care about achievements, maybe get the $60 pack one instead, because it gives you the DLC, and the DLC is probably going to be worth it for this game. I don't have access to it, so I cannot tell you for sure, but it probably will be. And it $10,
pick
fucking
it up.
Awesome. Deluxe exactly.
Edition, $10. Do it. Do it, Aki. Do it right now. Do it. Do it.
Let me look. Do Jesus.
It. Do it. Anyway, this is like a good place to do a fresh introduction, as we recently had two raids from Punished Echo and from Accidental Punch. Welcome in, everybody. Welcome in all the viewers. I am the host, Joe. I have Aki and Bree here, as well as our newest joining co-host, Pernell, is here. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm good. Tired, but good. Had a good board game night, so...
How'd it go? I was wondering if it was going to happen with the weather.
Oh, our weather went well. Like, we got like 16 inches of snow, but it melted so fast. The roads were clear by last night. So
damn. Our weather was great. 16 inches of snow.
Yeah, that's a rare thing. We got less snow last time, and we were stuck with it for 2 weeks. So, I mean, I think it just varies. I mean, it helps.
Warms up right away. Freezing temperatures.
That's what happened. It warmed up almost immediately, so the snow just started to melt. There was no freezing to deal with, so the snow was slushy and wet, no ice blocks to throw, so it helped. But, yeah, we got a fair turnout. We never get as much at this one as we get at the primary one that we do in the month, but it's still good that people can come out and game, so.
Now, part of board game, would you consider, like, choose-your-own-adventure books part of board games?
I probably wouldn't. No. I mean, like, if somebody wanted to come and play a tabletop RPG, well, no. I mean, if people want to sit there and do one collectively or collaboratively, knock themselves out. But, I mean, if people came and did D&D and they had their own group that wanted to do it, I wouldn't stop them. But choose your own adventures are typically meant to be done by yourself, reading a book in the corner and just flipping the page to the right adventure. So
that could be a social thing. What if you also had a character
and dice rolling?
Yeah.
I guess it could be considered a solo game.
Yes, what if it was on your Switch? RPG.
And I mean, I would go with that then, yeah.
And what if it was on the Switch?
No, it's a video game.
And what if you could win it through our show right now?
That's a video game. Still a video game, but it's a free one. So, hey, that's great.
Yeah, hey. Did you know Bree did a review for Fighting Fantasy Classics Volume 1 on the Switch? And Tin Man Games thought Bree was so friggin' awesome, because she is, that they sent us two copies of the game to give away.
Damn. Well, I mean, I'm surprised, but also not, because Bree is awesome. I'm just surprised people give games away for being awesome. We got to do that more often.
I mean, we give games away to make people think we're awesome. The scam. The whole 13 years I've been around this racket.
You're not supposed to give the racket up and on live on air.
Serious. Just
this
wait.
Once a hot mic moment.
Once we get the newest Gilson game, we're out of this, bitch.
Poor Pontus. Poor Pontus. He just wants a friend.
But yes, if you are hanging out in chat, thank you for being here. Make sure to drop a follow and come every Tuesday and Thursday when we do this crap. We are also going to have another episode tomorrow, Wednesday at 1, as we're going to have an interview for our weekend episode. And yeah, type exclamation enter for your shot at the Switch game, Fighting Fantasy Classics Volume 1. It is a North American region code. Type exclamation GW for more information, which is basically everything I already said, but it has links. So you could click those. But we got more games to talk about. Should we get back into these?
Yeah.
Pick Doula.
All right, next up, High on Life 2, developed and published by Squanch Games, provided to us by Squanch Games. Thanks, Squanch Games.
Thanks, Squanch.
Very squanchy.
Released February 13th, Series X and S, Xbox, PC, PS5, and normal PC for $59.99. You've done it. You've taken down an intergalactic cartel, brought humanity back from the brink of existence, and hunted dangerous bounties to the far corners of the galaxy. Bounty hunting has brought you fortune, fame, and love, but when a mysterious figure from your past reappears and puts a price on your sister's head, your cushy life gets thrown into chaos. Do you have what it takes to risk it all and bring down an intergalactic conspiracy that once again threatens your favorite species, humans? Pernell, Bree, Aki, everybody got to take a look at this one. Aki, start us off. What is going on in High on Life 2?
All right. So this is after the first game, obviously. You've gotten super famous for doing everything you did in the main game and its DLC. And you've become basically a giant celebrity. And then your sister, you know, decides to fuck off and join a eco-terrorist group instead. Because she thought it was a good idea. And eventually, you and you have to go end up saving her because she's gotten herself posted on the bounty board for, I think it was 15 or 30,000 credits. And in order to keep her safe, you have to break the bounty code. When one of the codes is, don't kill other bounty hunters, because that just turns you into a target instead. So you get turned into a target. Yay, you lose everything. All your upgrades, gone. Yay. And yeah, so now you're set up with your sister, because most of the terrorist group that she was with is gone now. And apparently a big pharmaceutical company has decided to try and turn humans into drugs, more or less, to stop other creatures' aches and pains. So first we were drugs, now we're a different type of drug.
Yeah.
However, currently humans are considered a protected species, so they're doing everything hush-hush, but they're also trying to actually get it properly legalized to turn you all into, you know, medicine again. So you're now, huh?
It's trying to make us a cattle species.
Yep. I mean, we kind of already are, in-game and out. And so you're now set up to go and assassinate a bunch of people who help this pharmaceutical company. You got a senator who is super pro them that they've bought off. You got a multi-billionaire, like one of the richest people in the universe, that you got to go kill. And after you kill them, it opens up some more things and some more people. Oh, and you have to go find lots of your gun friends again, because after you guys became famous, some of them just decided to fuck off. You only start off with two of them. Not the original one, because that it was voiced by somebody who's no longer part of this. So,
like, what all they do? They do the handle the disappearance.
He's just gone. They haven't brought him up a single time so far.
Did you play High on Knife?
I did not.
Because from what I heard is at the end of the High on Knife DLC, he just, like, left it behind and just left the gun there.
Oh, shit.
Like the That's gun funny. Or the character? Right, the gun or yes. The voice actor? Yeah. Or he's, like, left him on the ground.
Both, technically.
Yeah, because the guns are the funny characters.
Yeah. That's interesting. I did not know that. He is
Because I haven't played. I don't own High on Knife yet. So
I just bought it recently over break, and I haven't had a chance to go and play the first game again yet. So, yeah, they haven't mentioned him yet, but instead you start off with the needler-styled machine gun girl, who's really sassy, and I absolutely love her, and the dumbass of the group that is like Patrick Starr, that is a shotgun. And
Gus is awesome.
He's...
Love Gus.
I can't stand him. Love Gus. You do go back and find some
of Aggie.
I might. You do go out and find some of the older guns from the first game, but you also find some new guns. Like,
I know why Purnell likes Gus, because it's JB Smoove.
I do, though. Funny enough, my current favorite gun, believe it or not, actually is not JB Smoove Gus, because when I played the first High on Life, I had not watched Ghost yet, and since then I have watched the show Ghost. And one of the more hilarious ghosts on that show is the voice of the Needler gun. And I noticed it immediately. So I was like, yeah, sold. So, yeah, you should watch Ghost. And you'll appreciate Needler gun that much more.
Okay.
Is that Sweezy?
Yep.
That's the Sodaro.
Yeah, she's hilarious. Sorry.
So anyway.
Yeah. You also find some new guns like Travis, who is like an electric gun. It shoots little electric pulses out at enemies. He also has a special, his special ability is you shoot a blob of it out and it levitates things for a very short period of time. So yeah, you find stuff like that, and you're just basically getting ambushed instead of by, you know, the syndicate. You're instead being ambushed by bounty hunters that you have to kill the shit out of. So yeah, it's good fun. Good fun.
Brie, you also how about start you jump with Knifey. Oh, you start with Knifey?
Yes, you start with him. I actually forgot to mention him because I don't use. He doesn't talk to you very much. Sadly, except for in like specific parts of the game where he pops up and starts talking, unlike the other guns who can just start talking in the middle of nowhere. So I forgot he existed.
Well, Bree, start talking in the middle of the nowhere. What's going on your end?
Some
here?
Random notes here. There were 4 difficulty modes from easy to hard, and included an even easier story mode, which I thought was great. I loved the intro montage. I don't want to like ruin it by talking about it too much. I think it's something you should experience, but like that was some good storytelling opening of a game. I thought that was really strong comedic intro, that offers like tutorial stuff as well. It was very solid. And let's see, a couple things I appreciated. There's a streamer mode for licensed material issues, something they maybe learned from the first game. You can turn down enemy and gun chatter, so that it's not as frequent, or you can turn it completely off. And there is an aim assist you can adjust. I felt like the humor was more the same, but it didn't have the same splash as in the first game, maybe? Maybe that's
not even remotely.
It's just more of the same, but that said, I actually like the story. And I don't think Aki talked about the skating mechanic yet. In your first big like boss-ish battle, you end up getting a skateboard, which is like the new big mechanic that adds different layers to your movement and your shooting. Instead of just running and jumping and swinging on things, you can now grind on rails and up cords and skate across all sorts of things at a little faster speed while you're shooting, which is pretty darn fun. For me, though, combat itself felt like a little step back. Like, the gunplay didn't feel as tight for me as it did in the first game. I don't know if anybody else felt that way, but...
Oh, I agree with you.
Okay.
There's a lot of spray and pray going on.
Yeah. And I also ran into some stutters during gameplay where it would freeze for, like, a half a second randomly. I wish I could say it was just during, like, a transition to a new scene, but it seemed to be at other times during regular gameplay as well.
Yeah, it happens a lot in all the like hub towns you visit. It happens so much.
I've heard that performance and visuals are surprisingly an issue on this game after the first game ran so well.
Yeah. And I don't know if that was due to new mechanics or new coding issues, you know, upping the graphics or any of that. But yeah, there were a few issues. Nothing that I thought was game breaking, just noticeable.
No. Pernell, what kind of comments do you have to chime in on with High on Life 2?
Well, much has already been said, but I will mention that there are some pretty hilarious side elements to this game that really stuck out to me and actually kind of surprised me. Like, I mean, I don't want to spoil particularly because I think that's part of the point. There's licensed elements of hilarity in this game. I will say one thing because it's just outlandish and stupid. So there are a variety of unlockable arcade games that you can play in this game. And you got to find the ROMs that then plug them into the arcade cabinets. I was walking through the arcade and noticed certain cabinets looked more well kept than others. And I particularly stumbled across Bible Adventures. I was reading the side of the marquee. I was like, wait a minute. Is that the actual Bible Adventures game from the Nintendo Entertainment System? It absolutely is. And they put the back text of the box on the side of the arcade cabinet. You can buy the ROM to play Bible Adventures on this fucking system. It's freaking hilarious.
Oh, my God.
And there's a number of other, I can't believe they put this weird ass game in this game that I won't spoil, but Bible Adventures, just to show you the level of like how ridiculous deep cutting they did in some elements of this game. It's gold. Like I was legitimately impressed when I saw that and I laughed my ass off. They did add another new movie, at least one new movie. That's a real full length movie into the game that you can watch on the television if you wanted to. New commercials, which all this is to say that if you like the humor in the first game, you've come to the right place. Because even the stuff that doesn't hit, you're still going to smile and go, yeah, this is the stupid bullshit I came here for. So yeah. It's got a lot of that going on in spades. And I felt pleasantly entertained every step of the way. I just wish the gunplay didn't, again, I was telling me, I was agreeing with Breon. It felt so spray and pray because it could be old man eyes. It could just be the way the game was running. But there were scenarios where I'm like, crap, there's a sniper. Where? Hell if I know. Oh, man, there's like a bunch of guys at the food court. Where are they? Fuck if I know. They're just blending in, and they're all yelling at me. So just shoot your gun and hope you get a couple of them, except for that really big dude who clearly sticks out like a sore thumb. But the game is fun. I like it a lot.
All right. Anyone else have any other comments, or should we talk price on this one?
I'm good for price.
Aki?
I think I'll mention one more thing. The levels, I don't know if they're any larger than the original game where it was, but they feel a lot bigger. It feels like you have to go around and find a lot more things as well in every area. Because all the places are about as big as the hub area that you go to. So they're all kind of just massive and the only real thing to do for the most part is grabbing collectibles, because there are some little side quests, but all of them are attached to getting collectibles. And there's not a ton of them in any given area. Like on the beach, which is one of the first ones, I think I found like 5 of them, and there's like 30 or so of the items you have to collect. And it's just like, it kind of feels a little dead when you're going and looking around for stuff, because that's a majority of what it ends up being, is just looking around for stuff. And it's kind of sad. That's it.
All right. Well, let's talk price on this one. It is a full $59.99 game. Aki, start us off. Give us your verdict.
If you really liked the first one, I think you're probably going to like this one, so it's a buy it. If you didn't particularly like the first one, it's definitely a deny it, because this isn't going to be any better for you. And if you're on the fence, it's a try it. So I give it all 3 of them, depending on who you are, because it's kind of all over the place. It's a very, very helpful niche game to me.
That is how we nail down definitive review decision.
Yep.
Bree, any better advice from your end?
Yeah, I had fun with it. I really enjoyed the story. I wish the combat was a little better. I'm not sure I want to give it a buy it at that price, but I will give it a buy it on sale. I feel like if you like the first one, this is more of the same.
Burnell, thoughts?
I mean, I'd give it a buy under the other context of if you have not played the first game yet and you're like, well, I like this one. My advice is just play the first game first. I mean, this game is more of the same with some added changes, like slight improvements, in the sense that you would be kind of cheating yourself across the board by skipping the first game. And if you like the first game, well, this is an obvious buy it. So I'm just going to give it a buy it under that context.
Very good. Voice cast on this looks nuts. Ralph Ineson, Richard Kind, Ken Marino, JB Smoove, Tim Robinson, Gabri Sidibe, Matt Walsh is on here. I saw Thomas Lennon is on here. Maria Bamford, James Fulcher. It's insane. Or I'm sorry, not James Fulcher, Rich Fulcher. Crazy cast.
I mean, they went. I mean, I guess if they got the green for it, I mean.
Might
I'm not sure how that flies, though, because now that he's not a part of Rick and Morty, I'm not sure where much of that money comes from, but...
I don't know who owns Squanch. I don't know. But it's all Squanch, so... Anyway, moving on. Next up, Aquamarine Explorers Edition, developed by Mobile Studios, published by Dolores Entertainment, released February 23rd, Series X and S and Xbox PC, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $19.99. Inspired by the psychedelic sci-fi of the 70s and 80s, Aquamarine combines the mystery of old-school adventure games and challenging roguelikes with elements of survival, exploration, and puzzle-solving. Journey across a water world reclaimed by nature, overcome survival and navigational challenges as you discover the planet's lost history, master your pod's controls, study the ocean wildlife, and solve environmental puzzles to help you find your way home. Bree, what is going on in Aquamarine Explorers Edition?
So in this, we are the Seeker, a space traveler who's exploring near a water planet when something happens to the ship. And we crash land on a small island in the middle of a vast ocean on this uncharted planet. Thankfully, our survival pod works in the water as we search for our crashed ship and a way out of our predicament, because that is our mode of transportation throughout the game. There are four difficulties: Explore, Relaxed, Normal, and Expert. Explore has permadeath turned off, and Expert is only unlocked after finishing the game on any other difficulty. I mention these because we're going to talk about them again later. There don't appear to be any achievements for difficulty, so I went with Relaxed to start with, which is not the lowest level, but it is one below normal because I was not sure what to make of this when I got into it. The game also gives you an immersion suggestion at the beginning, saying that careful decisions are the key to survival, and you should take your time to soak in the world, which to me is to say that for the most part, there's very little urgency to this game. Standout for me with this was the art. It is great. It looks like hand-drawn, partly animated comic book art. There's a paper filter under the drawings that gives it the texture of paper to look more like it's in a comic book. The colors vary from drab to tropical, and it's always balancing that with aquatic blues. The art was standout, really. The music was very relaxing. The mechanics for the game are kind of point and click at first. You have a scene from a comic panel and a cursor to click on, hotspots, or use travel icons that show you where you can go. Then you move within a panel in the water. You have like little bubbles you can click on twice to move your pod. And this is all done with a cursor. So lots of cursor stuff going on. Other mechanics will require a bunch of different buttons on the controller. And then it gets complicated. This game also requires some survival style management. You need to manage your pod's energy. You may need to pick things up like crystals to do that. But first you need to process them by bringing up your pod's dashboard with left trigger, converting to energy with left bumper, and then you press right bumper to renew your hull. And other buttons confused me, and it was hard to remember them all because there's also things you can do on other buttons, including each direction on the D-pad. I felt like this needed a pull-up button map on the pause screen because, man, I came back to this later and it was rough to remember what I needed to do.
Yeah.
There's a slam function and I couldn't remember how to get to it. Cycling through the menus, it was weird. And back to the survival element, you also need to find food and remember to eat to keep your health up. And then the game is also partly roguelike because you can run out of supplies and the pot will crack and you'll have to regenerate on lower difficulties or start over on higher ones. I died really early on and switched difficulties. I went down to the lowest difficulty because I was annoyed. I kept not being able to figure out how to move between map tiles and ran out of energy with no way to replenish it. Specifically, I kept running out of energy trying to get out of the same map tile constantly. You have to use your long-range scanner to move tiles, but I couldn't figure out how to trigger the long-range scanner. I accidentally got out of there once, but then didn't have enough supplies to get back to the beach safely, and I died. There are other survival aspects you unlock as you explore the planet, like gardening, building a shelter, and cooking. As an example, you find like a big hunk of metal with stuff in it, and that opens up your gardening, which requires you to find seeds or pods and then fertilize them with mosses you find on your journey. And then when you're ready, you can harvest the plants and possibly eat them. The game gives you very little exploration tutorial to all this information. And I already found myself getting kind of bored quickly. I don't know. It wasn't clicking with me. I didn't feel like I was understanding how the maps worked and apparently missed some kind of explanation that you can surface your vehicle to maneuver. A lot of things, I feel like they aren't explained. I figured some things out eventually, but like, I didn't find a lot of the controls to be as intuitive as perhaps the devs had hoped as they translated to console controls. At some point in the plot, I managed to get back to the island to decrypt a floppy disk I found. And then you get like a choose-your-own-adventure encounter that gives you some potential good stuff. And there are several encounters like that that I found sitting on the beach on one of my many trips back from dying. And that was some of the more interesting part of the game for me. And then after 5 days of in-game time, I still hadn't figured out how to navigate the menus, so my character starved. And if you're on the easiest mode, the planet restores you and you're fine. If not, you're starting over. There are supposedly puzzles and turn-based combat in the game, but after hours of trying to get the basics down, I just couldn't seem to survive or get that far on super easy. So I don't know what I was expecting when I saw this game's description, but this wasn't it. I really liked the comic art. There was much more slow, contemplative game than I would have expected somehow, but like it didn't like the pressure of the survival elements. There are some comparisons I could draw between this and something like Subnautica. You have to find different alien elements for survival. You have to create mods for your pod instead of your suit. But it doesn't have the same vibe at all, not being first person. And the art mechanics are completely different vibe, too. So, anyway, I wasn't sure if I was missing something obvious. So I looked up the game's reception on PC, since this is a console port. And basically, the impression I got was that this game is extremely hit or miss. People either loved this and called it a surreal exploration masterpiece, or they kind of hated the controls and didn't like it at all, and I'm definitely not in the first camp.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, it's our job to make hard decisions. It's $20. Mm-hmm. I need a verdict.
I would pass on this game knowing what I know now, but I hate to say deny it. I think the price is a little high, and maybe I'd get this on Steam if you wanted to give it a try, because I think the controls would be better on keyboard and mouse. This was a beautiful game with interesting concepts, but the controls were hard to understand, the mechanisms were confusing even on super easy, and this really just wasn't for me. I feel like this might be a hit for other people, though, so the best I can give this is a try it on a deep sale.
It's really pretty, though.
It really is.
Like, the animation. I would love to see more games use this art style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really well done, the art style.
All right. Well, Bree, that is it for you. We will let you get going. Do you have any fun plans for the night?
No, I'm going to possibly take a hot shower because I feel like crap and go to bed early. And I'll see you for an interview tomorrow.
Hell yeah.
Those sound like great plans to me. Sleeping.
Have a good one.
You guys have a good night.
Later, buddy.
Next up, Chromagun 2 Die Hard, developed by Pixel Maniacs, published by PM Studios, released February 12th, Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5 for $19.99, Welcome to Chromatech, the universe's leading producer of the Chroma Gun, patent pending. Here at Chromatech, colors are magnets. Well, not exactly. Magnetoid chromatism, a physical property of the pan-dimensional realm, is a bit more complex than that. In layperson's terms, walls attract objects of the same color. All kinds of objects, like large boxes, or small boxes, or medium boxes, or super safe, friendly, decidedly non-murderous worker droids. List not exhaustive, patent pending. Use your refined painting and color mixing skills to voluntarily solve intricate puzzles on the Chromatech testing track for Chromagun research purposes Mark II, aka Chromagun 2. Aki, what is Chromagun 2 Die Hard?
Okay, and this, you have basically just finished the first game stuff, and you're walking into a new building, and you get reassigned to do all the shit all over again. Yay! Have fun! And it drops you into a giant fuck-off-sized hole where your chroma gun actually gets destroyed, and the person's like, oh, well, you're a piece of shit. You know how much that cost me? How dare you? very much in the Stan Lee parable or Wheatley way of speaking to you. And then you're sent off to go get the yellow chroma gun. Just yellow. It doesn't have any other colors. Just yellow. And then you have to go into this portal to go into alternate realities. Dun, dun, dun! And you're solving puzzles in all of these locations, trying to basically finish so you can survive and hopefully not be tricked into a giant hole that puts you into a third game. One can hope. You will. Oh, I'm sure. I'm 100% sure that you're going to fall into a hole like a dumbass. All the puzzles end up being, you know, you shoot a big square with one of the colors, and it attracts anything of that color towards it. Lots of times, you're going to have little worker drone bots that are around. Some of them are just drone bots. They don't move. They're just big circles. They might as well be giant balls. Some of them turn into spinning blades that chase after you to hurt you. Not that they actually do anything, because you can't die in the game, so... some of them you're able to change the colors of the drone, others you can't, and it's the same for the square. Some of them are actually locked in as a specific color, and you can combine colors even on ones that you can change the color of anyways. Some of them start off as white, and you can just put whatever colors you want up there. Some of them will start off as a specific color, and if you hit them with that same color, nothing happens, but if you hit them with one of the other two colors... it'll change to whatever those two colors mixed make. So your starting colors are red, blue, yellow. So if it starts off as yellow, you can either shoot it with blue and make green, or shoot it with red to make orange. And if you shoot it with anything after that, it just turns black and it's disabled until you undo it. Yay! Sometimes you're pulling all of these balls to things, so you can either get them onto pressure plates or to get them just off to the side so they don't continue to bother you. Sometimes you're hitting little boxes with the different colors, so they'll be drug around so you can get into different ventilation systems and stuff. Sometimes you're using it on platforms so you can raise and lower them so you can get around in levels. I have played through the first full two chapters, and I'm most of the way through the third chapter out of five chapters. The games start off not too difficult, but it does have occasional, like, individual levels that are really hard, and then it goes back to slowly ramping up the difficulty. But whilst I say it's slowly ramping it up, every area has like 7 to 10-ish levels, and by the time you're on like level 15, it is surprisingly difficult, actually. So yeah, it ramps up and you can feel it, but it's not super noticeable And then there's occasional bursts where, oh, this specific level is really hard. And then it goes back to what you expect. But it got to a point where it was like, I'm having trouble figuring out what I need to do. Because some of these levels, you know, you have to send specific items through pathways and then send a different item through that pathway. But you can send either one of them you want first. But it only works if you send a specific one of them in first. Otherwise, it gets all sorts of fucked up. Yay! So you have to figure that stuff out, usually by spending like 30, 40, 50 minutes in a level trying to figure out what the fuck am I doing wrong again? And then noticing it and being like, oh, and then resetting the whole damn thing. and then trying it all over again.
Well, this one clocks in at $19.99. Does it live up to the original game? Is this a good sequel? What should people do? $20. Give us a verdict.
If you're photosensitive, probably don't play this game. It's it has a lot of lights and stuff in it. It also has very, very, very small subtitles. So, yeah, be prepared for that. But otherwise, yeah, it's pretty good. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. All of the directors, I guess I'll call them, the people who are basically taking Wheatley's place from Portal, they're all fairly funny. They're very different. And yeah, I really like it. I think if you like the first Chroma Gun, you're going to love this game. And if you haven't played the first Chroma Gun, you should probably play it because it's really good. They're very much like Portal, and everyone loves Portal. You'll love this game too. It's real fun. Totally worth it.
All right. Next up, Under the Island, developed by Slime King Games, published by Top Hat Studios, released February 17th. Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, PC for $19.99. Embark on an epic adventure in Under the Island, a 2D action adventure steeped in 90s charm. Step into the shoes of Naya and battle fierce monsters, solve clever puzzles, and explore a world alive with mystery as you race to save your new home before it's too late. Discover the legend of what's Under the Island. Purnell, what is Under the Island?
It's a great game. Spoilers, yeah, no, but get over it. what is it? So an easy way to describe this game before even going into anything else is, what if somebody liked Minish Cap but wanted to play it again, but different because it's a new game? That's this game. And if you answered that question when I mentioned it, it's like, oh yeah, I love Minish Cap and I wish I could play something like that. Well, you can stop listening to this review and just buy the game because it's going to give you what you want.
More Acolyte, did you stop listening to the review to get the game?
I might have a slightly different opinion than Purnell on this one.
Now I'm scared. This is going to become real scary. He's like, joke's on you, Purnell. You don't get a pygmy hat.
This review is going to end in a fist fight.
Nah, different yeah. Strokes, different folks, but I'm genuinely curious about it. So in this game, you play as Naya, who shows up at this island that her parents drugged her out to, and she didn't want to be here. But guess what? Tough to bully. She's got to show up. And because this game needed a quick way to just set you up with an incident to get the game rolling, she meets a girl. Girl says, don't touch that statue. She says, I'm going to touch that statue. And then all hell breaks loose, and she learns that the island is sinking, and she has to find the four MacGuffins to stop it from happening. All of which to say, get out and explore the island, you crazy, crazy girl. So you are tasked with exploring, finding four dungeons, which hide the MacGuffins. And as you're doing that, you're walking around fighting little baddies from screen to screen. You fight them using your hockey stick. Was this game created in Canada? I sure hope so. But you fight with, I think it's funny too, because you fight with a hockey stick in this game. There was another game I played like this that you fought with a cricket bat, and that was made in Australia. So it's like, I think that's how this structure this thing out. But you walk around, you find all the elements that would make a Zelda game what it is. You find four heart coins, take it to an NPC, bam, you got a heart container. Go into a dungeon, find a dungeon item, and now you can use that item to, you know, solve issues within the dungeon. and then eventually fight the boss. Or if it's not a boss, it might be a event scenario where you have to do something to help someone. There are also overworld elements you can find, such as quick travel, where you can use it to warp between areas on the map, save points on the map, hidden caves and rooms, and many events that can lead you to get further upgrades in the game, and a nice cool day-night cycle as well. Before I say anything else, because I'm curious, I want to know, I feel like I gave a general spin on the game, aside from just noting that you fight with a hockey stick and you can't jump, but you get items that you can equip to the B and Y buttons. But I'm curious about what Horakulite says, because now I'm ready to go back and be like, okay, now that he said this, I got to revisit my take on the game.
I mean, I don't want to. Yeah, well, okay. So this game is obviously a passion project that was made by people who love the classic Zelda games. And I personally think there's a lot of aspects to it that were done especially well, mainly like the art design, anything revolving around that was done phenomenally. All the world, the environments look great. Enemies look pretty solid. The bosses were pretty good for the most part. I still haven't quite finished the game. I'm kind of at like the 3/4 mark. I got to collect like one more gear, I think, and do a couple more side things. But I think my... This is going to be a contentious one because I like more challenging games, but obviously this game is kind of made with like a more casual experience in mind, at least if you're collecting most of the optional items as you're progressing through the game. Like if you get all the heart pieces as you're exploring, I would say the game's pretty easy and almost to the point where it's
there for sure.
Almost to the point where it's like too easy though sometimes, because like all the boss fights, you don't really even have to like learn anything for the bosses. Like every boss I've just kind of like steamrolled my way through without any like thought to it. It's I don't know. I was like kind of hoping for some more interesting boss engagements, especially when there's like some good setup to the boss fights too, and like the scenarios that they kind of have going into them. Because each like boss fight is kind of separated into like a story segment for each zone, and then they kind of just like as anticlimactic almost, at least for me anyways. Yeah, everything revolving around the bosses is really good, like the setup. But yeah, then when you actually fight them, it's like, oh, that was it. That's okay. But yeah, I think that's my probably biggest issue with the game so far is the difficulty. But again, for some people that might not be an issue, but even if it wasn't like necessarily like much harder, I wish the boss fights were like a bit more engaging or like puzzle, maybe not puzzle focused, but like, you know, had some thought involved with like what needs to be done to try and beat the boss, I would say. But that could just be my own opinion. So
I gotta say, you had me really freaking scared when you were like, we might differ on this. Nothing you said is something I would disagree with, to be quite frank with you. The game is pretty lollygag easy. And if it weren't going to be easy, you already have scenarios where it's like, oh, I'm going to go up in this room. And there's a woman like, you don't want to go up here, hombre. There's some bad pilgrims up here ready to show you what's what. So, like, there is definitely, like, stay some hand-holding in that
shit, Dewey.
You don't want nothing to do with this shit, Dewey. Well, I'm not finding heart containers up there. There are 4 heart coins in that area, Dewey. But with that said, though, when I made the comparison to Minish Cap, I believe that honestly includes the difficulty in that sense. I personally found Minish Cap to be pretty easy, but it was fun. Just easy.
That's fair. Know, I haven't played that one, to be fair. I haven't played most of the handheld Zelda games, just the console ones.
Minish Cap was easy as
Link's
balls.
Awakening is my number one.
I agree with Joe on that one. The two Oracle games.
That was the only handheld one I did play, and I didn't really care for it.
The only Zelda game I've ever played.
Fuck you.
Mike, did you play Link's Awakening when it was new?
No, I played it way down the road.
I feel a little better than you, because if you play like a bunch of other games and you've had access to modern, you know, handheld Zeldas or whatever, and you play Link's Awakening, it is a little bit there, but
I'm gonna blow some minds with this. My dad bought me Link's Awakening for the original Game Boy from KB Toys in Hazleton, PA, because I got a blue medal at a swim meet.
Oh, damn.
Me.
I mean, that doesn't blow my mind. I worked at KB Toys,
my
and I loved that 300-pound
fat ass swimming.
We were all young at some point.
First place.
We were all young at some point. Good, right? I totally believe you could have been a swimmer, so that didn't blow my mind. We're old, man. Shit happens. Also, it's also that you were a swimmer. I still don't know how to swim. I'm hitting all the stereotypes tonight. But with that said, like, I feel like if I were coming to this for a challenge, I agree with you. This would be a pretty piss poor run because the game is pretty easy. But truth be told, there are a lot of games I go to get challenges from. And thankfully, in this climate, challenge is not very far away ever if I want to play a game that has it. But if I just kind of want to run around on an island and find my fourth heart coin to go to a muscle-bound guy with an oven grilling a steak and say, yo, bro, give me that heart, he'll do it. And he'll do it kindly, too. It's just basically enough to say that, like, I get it. If you're here for a challenge, you ain't going to have fun with this game. Just step away. If you just want to be a kid running around on your not quite summer vacation, but, you know, way home away from home, trying to save an island with a hockey stick and such, I think you'll have a good time with this title. Music is good. Graphics are good. The sense of discovery is fun. Even if it's all generally stuff that's been there, done that, it won't matter if you're craving to see it again. So It's just a good time. I wish the Game Boy actually let you play a game instead of just pass time. I'll tell you that.
Oh, I know, right? That was the first thing I saved up for. I'm like, ooh, a mini game. Pass time.
Yeah.
Mother.
Yeah, I totally thought that was going to do something too, especially when it was like 300 coins or something like that in the store. I was like, what the hell?
I just hit it a bunch of times and it passed time. Oh, you bitch.
To be fair, though, at least they do have that weird monkey game where you eat the fruit. I played that way too much. It's like a game where the monkey has to eat fruit and then go to the bathroom. I thought that.
Yeah, you get a hard coin too if you get the high score or whatever. Golf?
I did.
I got the two stroke.
I got the two.
I wish they told you what was required to get the hard coin though, because for all I know, I probably still haven't gotten everything in that dang thing.
For the monkey game or the coconut golf.
For the coconut golf, I got a four, and they gave me a heart coin. I was like, well, I guess that must be the prize, and I stopped.
The four is the heart coin. I don't think there's anything past that. The two just gave you more gold after, but that's the achievement was for the two. Yeah.
Oh, there's an achievement to get it at two?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God. I got to go back and hit that in two strokes?
Do you want a tip?
I don't know if you want to... a spoiler for how you do that, but yeah.
Well, I want a spoiler because I already got the prize. I just want to get the achievement.
You need bombs. Bombs pretty much. You might be able to do it without bombs. Like I almost did it with just the sliding kick. Yeah. I had an easier time with it.
It was easier to line up the dash kick because if you do the bomb, you have very little control over how that fucker ricochets. If you do sliding attack, if you hit it perfectly, it basically gives you a line that you just hit it one more time and it's exact.
And that's what I need right there. Yeah, because hitting it with the stick, it was really hard to get a lined up shot with that thing.
You need the sliding attack because that like doubles the length.
In that case, I have the sliding attack, so I'm going back with that mamma jamma.
All right, let's talk about price on this one. It is a $20 game. What do you two think of Under the Island?
I'm going to say buy it, but with the context that you mentioned earlier, being that if you're here for a challenge, you're not going to find it. So in which case, take that statement with a grain of salt. But if the challenge is irrelevant to you and you just like, do I want to play some Zelda-like antics on a new console or a new screen, you're going to find a good time here. So I give it a buy.
Yeah, I pretty much share the same sentiment as Purnell here. They're not reinventing the wheel if you're looking for a fun Zelda game that's not very challenging. But it's obviously maybe people that really respect those older Zelda games. And this is a good entry for that. But just don't be expecting to have much resistance when playing this. But it's a nice game to look at and it is fun to play. So
Very good. I'm going to agree. I adore the hell out of this game. I had my eyes on it before the review. Purnell was handling the review, said he had company. I'm like, you know, I'm going to pick it up, play it this weekend, and chime in. And it was absolutely worth the $20 I paid for it. So, buy it. I agree, buy it.
Added it to my wish list.
Good. Better. Actually, it's on sale for $16.99, so save $3 and get it now for the next week. There you go. Horakla, you going to stick around for the last review, or are you bouncing now?
Sure, I'll stick around.
All right, because we got one final game to talk about, and that is Mortanis Prisoners, developed by Honor Games. Oh, did you? Did you play it yet?
Oh, yeah. It's in chat.
Oh, ha ha. Aki, are you looking at chat?
No, but I have a feeling I'm about to be made very, very use.
Mortanis Prisoners, Clean Edition, developed by Honor Games, published by Axios Games, released February 20th on Series X and S for $19.99. Mortanis Prisoners is a survival horror shooter set in a Nazi concentration camp. Oh, you can't curse about Nazis? Oh. Oh, Aki, this is going to be a hard one. After a
yes,
planned
it is.
Rebellion,
that's why he did it.
After a planned rebellion is discovered, the leadership orders mass executions, but something is far more sinister awakens. Step into the boots of a lone survivor facing not just human cruelty, but a deeper nightmare that lurks within the shadows of the camp. Aki, without any profanity, tell us, what is Mortanis Prisoners?
I just want to preface this whole thing by saying I do not approve of Nazis. I just can't insult them because apparently
I'm going to give you I am going to allow you one fuck Nazis right now.
Fuck Nazis.
There. I allowed that one. That one was fair. That's fair game.
That's reasonable. I approve of that. Yeah.
You could have saved it for like a really amazing point in the review. It's like, and by the way,
I had to do it right
technically,
then.
Technically, she's only got to go 5 minutes. So if she goes over 5 minutes, she could say fuck Nazis all she wants.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. So in this, you play as a young woman. who I assume is Jewish. And she one day gets, you know, a nice little friendly visit from your local Nazi constabulary, and they decide they're going to take her in and use her for human experiments. Yay! Ooh. They're the best, aren't they? I'm sure there's nice people on both sides. And so, yeah. You wake up in a morgue. See, I can still be funny. You pull yourself out of the little cooling units that are in the wall. I don't know what they're actually called. And you find that there's no one here, but this place is a complete wreck. And, well, everything's locked up, probably because there were Jewish people here at one point. Yeah, you start looking around and you find some guns and some notes left by Nazi scientists and other Nazis that Nazied around. And so hard not to cuss.
Turn it into different parts of speech.
Yep.
How you need to talk.
And instead you keep finding these zombies, I guess is what we're going to call them. I don't know what exactly it is, but apparently this place is both in the real world and in some parallel messed up dimension that looks to be in the location referred to as hell. Not a cuss word, a place. Yeah, I win.
Yep.
So sometimes you look out windows.
Make it count.
You can't. So sometimes you look out the windows and you see just a mass of bodies all connected together like they're from like Dead Space monstrosities or something. And other times you look outside and you actually see, you know, the prison camp that you're in. It's really weird that way. And around you're seeing what looks like people, but like they're shadows. Some of them are white, some of them are black. I don't know why. And when you get close to them, they just disappear. Otherwise, you can watch them doing whatever they're doing. Most of them are just sitting there.
Did you say that? Are these the zombie things like that? Does that mean you were with white zombie?
No, but there are white zombies. A lot of them. So you can watch these things. Most of them, they're just sitting there, you know, looking through paperwork or something. They're not actually doing anything. Some of them will walk around a little bit. And otherwise, besides just those ethery things, there's the, for lack of a better word, zombies around, and there's a few different types. There's, you know, ones that seem to be missing a head, or I mean, not a head, a face. Some of them that seem to have faces, and then there's these black inky ones that sometimes have these giant stinger tentacles that come out of them that attack you at a distance. And yeah, you're going around knifing these things as best as you can, or shooting them when you find guns, or, you know, at the very beginning of the game, you also have an option to turn on hardcore mode, which leaves you with very limited everything from inventory space to ammo allotment, all that fun stuff, to three other options. One that gives you the max amount of inventory space, one that gives you an infinite Tommy gun, I think is what it is, and I don't remember what the other one does, because it doesn't really matter, because once you have that gun, it's irrelevant. And yeah, you go around, you kill the things, and mostly try to skirt around them, because you don't have a ton of ammo unless you have the infinite ammo gun. And yeah, you're more or less just trying to find the different keys and stuff so you can lock different doors and get around this building to try and find your exit, more or less. This isn't a super, super long game, but your first playthrough is going to be incredibly long just because you're going to be backtracking, trying to figure out what door said key opens, because it doesn't really tell you. You just find a key and it'll be like, oh, this is the technical room key. Okay, where's the technical room? Go find it. So that's how all of them are. The key will tell you what room it goes to, but doesn't tell you where that room is. And when you find that room, you don't know what it is until you have the key that it opens. So fun. And yeah, it does have some minor puzzles in it. For instance, there was a gear puzzle, you know, the ones where it has a whole bunch of places where you can place gears, and you have to put them in the right order so the gears will start turning to open something up. It had four gears. That's the extent of the difficulty of the puzzles, realistically, is that.
So it was not like a war of a puzzle to put together?
No, not at all.
No, it was gears of war.
Very new. No, it was not. You've made me sad. Thank you.
Good. Anything else to say, or are you ready to give a verdict on this?
Has it been 5 minutes yet?
I don't know. Just
has it been 5 minutes yet?
Focus on the review. Focus on the review.
Yeah, sure. It's done. I can't think of anything anymore. My brain's barely functioning at this point.
All right, your 5 minutes is up. So $20 on Mortanis Prisoners. What do you officially say?
I'm going to put it as a try it, because this is a very simple game, and it's not like you're killing all the fucking Nazis you come across, because you don't come across any of the motherfuckers. So, you know, that's kind of sad. Instead, you're killing these things, and every time you exit an area and re-enter it, they appear again. So it's kind of hard to suggest it, just because some of the achievements look really hard, and the game doesn't have a ton to offer, but it also isn't a bad game. It's just okay. So I'll stick with a try it.
Works for me. And with that, we are done with this episode. Didn't have an interview. It was nice. It was just Nazis. To do our thing and move on kind of show. Big thanks to Bree, Tim, Horacle, and Andy for coming on, doing their things through the show. Oh wait, Horacolite's still here, isn't it? I don't have my window open. So you got to talk more. You got to talk
more. Oh, he
this is like thank you for being here.
I thought you were going to make fun of Aki a whole lot more during that review.
I didn't want to poke the beehive. It was bad enough that I did that.
Yeah, like on some of the games that would have been fine. Not on the game where I'm talking about Nazis. What the fuck?
Oh, that's why I thought it was funnier. And I wasn't sure how good the game was. So it was really bad. It would have been funnier.
It was very funny.
Yeah, thankfully it wasn't a terrible game. It was just okay.
Yeah. Anyone have a suggestion for music we could use at the end of the show?
Come on, dude.
No, I'm not good with music. Sorry.
I would only say something by Prozac or something like that.
I'm from Prozacs.
I could use a Prozac.
Wow, right, that's a throwback of a name I haven't heard in a while. I will.
I'm gonna move for it, lately, because I was talking about Blaster Master recently. So.
I will peruse the archives and see what Prozacs I have.
If you have the one from Blaster Master, play that. But otherwise, anything.
Let me see. What do I have? Prozacs.
Oh, I thought you meant the other band, Prozac, like Strange Disease.
Which one? Rocket, you said?
Yeah, Rocket's so good.
Looks like we got that lined up. That'll be the music. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Fuck Nazis.
I agree. Fuck Nazis.
Not literally, metaphorically.
Yeah, with Aki, you can't be too sure. That's
true, yeah.
Well, I mean, if you got one of those, like, spiked bat things, yeah, I guess.
Ow.
I need to stop thinking of that. Because that's bringing me a lot of joy, and that's not good.
On the house, for you, friend.
SML After Dark.